A comprehensive, updated list of Artemis Croc's problems, in no particular order. 1.
She's a princess now, apparently.
2.
Water polo MVP Cal Durham is not single.
3. Artemis is a high school student, and she has class tomorrow morning, so she's just going to give you the Spark Notes version of what happened after she regained consciousness in the exact same spot on the floor to find her mom kicking Oliver's roll behind at Tianlun while Dinah cleared her gun on the couch.
Ah, you're awake,
Oliver exclaims when he sees her, beaming. Artemis starts to sit up.
Now then, about you being a princess.
Artemis lies back down. Ollie, you could stand to be a little more tactful, Dinah hisses. And then she's standing over Artemis with an extended hand and an apologetic look. Here, Artemis, let's just do this one step at a time. Artemis doesn't take her hand, but she gets to her feet, staggering toward the chair at the table opposite Oliver's, kitty corner from her mother. Dinah nods, as if in approval, before going to stand over Oliver's shoulder, her arms linked behind her back. Oliver gives her this big grin and tells her to call him Uncle Oliver, at least for now. Artemis is still in the process of getting back into her chair, so at that precise moment, the only thing she wants to call him is something very insulting. Dinah is his bodyguard, and she does not go by Aunt Dinah or Ms. Lance or, holy crap, is that a gun? Just Dinah. Artemis can tell within 5 minutes that she's the brains of the government, probably, since Oliver just looks like he blusters around and does what looks the friendliest, even though dropping into Artemis's life and telling her she's a princess is the most hostile thing ever. She was trained by the Vlatavan Secret Service, starting when she was 15.
And, wow, okay, Vlatava.
Artemis has heard of it once, maybe twice, mostly when she was a kid and the only thing that was ever on the news for 2 weeks in November was the 10-year-old Queen Perdita's open-heart surgery, which she didn't survive. Rest in peace. Now that Artemis thinks of it, Perdita's death and her dad's decision to cut and run had only been a month or two apart. And, apparently, right after Perdita died, Vlatava exiled some count, Werner or something or other, because he'd had something to do with what happened to Perdita, because he was evil. Come on, he was a count. What other alignment could he have? But the point is, the whole royal family is a mess. But seriously, Vlatava, it's this dinky little principality somewhere between Austria and Hungary, founded in 1763, and it had been taken over by the Soviet Union back during the Cold War before it staged a revolution and broke free, reinstating the, by then, genetically diluted monarchy. Their standing army consists of maybe 200 soldiers. The place with the most employees is the Royal Palace, and they're famous for their Olympic archery team and their chili. Seriously, chili in Eastern Europe. Now do you get why no one cares about this country? Admittedly, the whole familial treachery and regicide thing was kind of interesting. Although Artemis feels kind of bad now because apparently Perdita was her first cousin once removed or something, so she really shouldn't be calling her murder interesting. But when a country is as boring as Vlatava, it should take what it can get, is all she's saying. But other than that, Vlatava has next to nothing going for it. Except, of course, for the Olympic archery team, which has been winning for the past 7 years in a row or something. As for how innocent, ordinary Artemis Lan Croc fits into all this... Okay, hang on. Oliver wrote it down for her. Vlatava founded, 1763. King Ulf and Queen Camilla had estranged brother Dietrich, who had Skandor and Charlotte, who both died of the measles. King Ulf and Queen Camilla had Prince King Amadeus and Princess Hannah. Prince King Amadeus married Queen Sybil, who had Prince Joseph, Princess Ilsa, and Prince Anton. Princess Hannah had Tobias, out of wedlock, and Tomas and Brunhilde, twins, in wedlock. Princess Ilsa married Axel, Duke of Latvia, had Queen Belinda, Princess Johanna, Princess Vida, and adopted Prince Phineas. Brunhilde had Philippa and Alana. Alana and adopted Prince Phineas had a relationship. Philippa had Count Brown, who had Countess Dorothea and Count Gregor. Count Gregor had Count Werner, Countess Magda, who had Queen Perdita. Queen Belinda and adopted Prince Phineas had King Marius, Princess Ida, and Prince Randolph. King Marius had Princess Laura, who remarried Prince Oliver, who adopted Prince Roy. Princess Lana had Prince Lawrence, who had Princess Jade and Princess Artemis. Prince Randolph had Prince Hugo. Ulf, 1738 to 1772. Camilla, 1750 to 1786. Married, 1565. Amadeus, 1766 to 1806. Sybil, 1775 to 1835. Married, 1590. Nannerl, 1770 to 1798. Died in childbirth. Tobias, 1798 to 1842, disowned. Joseph, 1792 to 1799, died of measles. Ilsa, 1800 to 1869, married 1622. Anton, 1804 to 1815. Belinda, 1823 to 1906. Johanna, 1824 to 1862. Vita, 1834 to 1900. Thomas, 1810 to 1827. Brunhilde, 1810 to 1847. Philippa, 1830 to 1908. Alana, 1838 to 1857. Died in childbirth. Phineas, 1857 to 1919. Ida, 1869 to 1913. Marius, 1874 to 1940. Randolph, 1880 to 1939. Hugo, 1901 through 1980. Lara, 1927 through 1986. Oliver, 1973 to current day. Lawrence, 1966 through current day. Roy, 1992 through current day. Jade, 1992 through current day. Artemis, 1995 through current day. Bram, 1856 to 1928. Dorothea, 1883 to 1969. Gregor, 1890 to 1956. Werner, 1940 to 2009. Magda, 1952 to 2002. Perdita, 1993 to 2003. So, yeah. Artemis is descended from King Marius, mostly, who ruled over Vltava for, like, 16 years, before the Soviet Union came plowing in and dissolved the monarchy, making everyone a count or countess as some kind of a courtesy. Apparently the Bolsheviks were way nicer in Vltava. Everyone from Bram to Magda was a bunch of counts and countesses already, though. But that was just because they were all descendants of Tobias, who was born out of wedlock and therefore disowned from the royal family and forbidden from ever being able to take the throne, even through his kids and grandkids and crap. But the family felt sorry for them, or something, so when Philippa had Bram, around the time Belinda and Phineas were in charge, everyone on that side of the family was given countship, just so their line wouldn't be doomed to live in poverty and humiliation for the rest of eternity. Princess Lara had Lawrence, Artemis's dad, first, but then her husband, some Duke of Bulgravia who stuck the name Croc into Vltavan family tree, kicked the can because of typhoid or something, so she remarried this guy named Rory Mott Queen, a diplomat from Australia. which was apparently quite the scandal at the time because she was marrying around outside of a royal family. Since Mott didn't really seem like a very grandiloquent surname for a few new princes to have, it was crossed off so that Lara and Rory's kids would have the nice, regal name of, well, Queen. So they had Oliver, who then went on to shoot for the archery team in his youth until he got testicular cancer, before he thought reproducing might be a good idea. Nice job, Oliver. And had to get one of his baby-making sacs taken out, and now he can't produce an heir, which is obviously lame for Vlatava. So he tried adopting. He wasn't married or anything, for some reason. When Artemis asked what the deal with that was, he just kind of cleared his throat and kept going. He took in Roy Harper, the orphaned son of a couple of Latavan forest rangers who died in a bear attack, and taught him archery, basically treating him like his own son, and it was all going great except for one thing. Roy hadn't known he'd been adopted. And he took it badly, if the fact that he hightailed it out of the country in the middle of the night by ship is anything to go by. Oliver hasn't been able to locate him since, so his responsibilities have been lifted, which is totally unfair if you ask Artemis. How is it that this Roy guy is gifted with a get-out-of-ruling-a-small-principality-free card, and she's the one stuck having to wear ball gowns and practice walking with an apple on her head? His name literally means King Queen. If anything, though, now Artemis knows why her dad split when he did. After the Cold War ended and the monarchy was reinstated, Princess Lara, well, Queen Lara for like 5 minutes, was already dead and stuff, and Oliver was getting sick, so the country was all worried that they lose their new king, and even if Roy was technically adopted into the royal family, it was unlikely they'd let him rule anyway, and when he disappeared and Perdita died, Oliver had to just give it up and track down Lauren so he could tell him the situation, and, well, long story short, your father was not a diplomatic man by nature. Paula murmurs. Artemis doesn't know why she can feel tears dribbling down her face. This is embarrassing. I'm sure you remember. He was just not willing to shoulder the duties required of him. He left the country in the first place so that he could try to escape his responsibilities. Her expression darkens. Something he was very good at. When Oliver and Dinah first approached him, when you and Jade were very young, he simply did it again. I say good riddance, Oliver declares gruffly. All he ever did was loosen my saddle during riding lessons so I'd fall off my horse. He could have killed me, and he didn't like chili to boot. Artemis is full out sobbing now. As if it wasn't bad enough that she'd been crying a few hours ago in her room, now she's doing it in front of the King of Latava. Why is this happening to her? And while she's at it, what is up with these Latavans and jumping ship when the chips are down? Jeez. Someone taps her shoulder, and she glances up, snuffling, wiping at her nose. Dinah is discreetly offering her a handkerchief, not looking at her. Artemis takes it, blows her nose, and then starts crying harder. Not sad tears. Distinctly, unequivocally angry tears. Because her mom has been lying to her all her life. Her dad had also been lying to her all her life. Much less of a surprise, though, honestly. Jade's gone. Jade's been gone, and she probably didn't even know. And they're sure as hell not going to track her down. Artemis kind of hopes they don't, for her sake, because Jade's probably even less suited to ruling than Artemis is. Everything she's done, every second she's lived, has been under the guise of this enormous and unbelievable truth that she hadn't even been aware of. And why? Did they think she was stupid? Not worth telling? Not good enough? Not impressive enough? Was it because of her grades? Her student disciplinary record? The fact that not even her own dad had thought she was good enough to stick around for? Not that she cares about his opinion. Is that why she's only hearing all of this when she's their last resort? What? What are you guys here for, then? She barks aggressively at Dinah and Oliver. Oliver blinks at her as though startled, probably by her splotchy, snot-covered face and red eyes. Or is the occasion just, you know, ruining everything? I should say not, Oliver says, looking ruffled. Artemis is pretty sure she sees Dinah roll her eyes behind her sunglasses, which she hasn't taken off since she'd come in. With you being the only viable heir to the throne now, Artemis, I've taken it upon myself to come out to the States for a few months and, well, he grins, teach you how to be a princess. His eyes start to shine. You'll be like my little protege. Artemis chokes on her own spit. As if. In more specific terms, Dinah inserts calmly, we're both here to give you daily lessons, after school, to educate you on politics, posture, etiquette, presentation, international crisis management, and any other duties that will be required of you when you take the throne. What? Artemis shrieks. I'm not taking any throne! Keep your stupid throne! If you don't, Artemis, there's a good chance that the Vlatavan royal family will die out, Oliver tells her somberly, in a lower and more subdued voice than she'd have expected. It's not as though you don't have any choice, but you have very little. Artemis can't breathe. It's like somebody is inflating a balloon in the middle of her throat. Her hands are shaking and her arms feel hot and her face hurts and her fingernails are digging into her palms and she's still crying. Why didn't you tell me, Mom? She hears herself yell, in this strained and uncontrolled sob that makes her want to punch herself in the face. Paula actually flinches. Her hand slips away from where it had been resting on Artemis's and drops into her lap. I wanted you to have a chance at some normalcy, she replies, sounding on the brink of tears. I wanted that for both you and Jade. And when your father left, I did not want to drop this on both of you. Not then. And not since. You did not deserve to have it hanging over you. Well, apparently I've had it hanging over me the whole time, whether I deserved it or not. I've just been too dumb to notice, Artemis shouts, pounding her fist on the table and startling Oliver, who has been steadily scooting further and further away the more heated Artemis has gotten. Is that why you transferred me to Gotham Academy? Is that why you're constantly giving me all this junk about acting like a lady and not picking fights? Is that why you don't let me stay out past 8? Why would... Her voice hitches, and it hurts. It's just been you and me for 3 years, Mom. And you never thought it'd be a good idea to be honest with me? Her mom is grimacing as though she's in mortal pain. And maybe she is. Artemis wouldn't care at this point, because at this point, she feels like she's the butt of some rude, terrible joke. And you! Artemis whirls on Oliver, pointing a finger at him. His goatee actually droops. You think you can just come barging into my life and my school night and flip it all over and expect me to be fine with it? I go to school! I have a chemistry quiz tomorrow that I'm probably going to fail! And I'm not going to give all of it up so you can try and sculpt me into your perfect little successor, okay? I don't care what chance the royal family has. The same royal family that basically disowned me before popping back on to tell me how it's been lying to me for years, by the way. And... incidentally, I barely know how to walk without breaking something. You seriously want to put me in a palace filled with priceless china? No way! All of the stuff you're talking about, it's not me. And it's never going to be me. Do you get that? It's not. I'm not anybody. I'm not whatever that name that was that you called me. I'm just Artemis. I'm Artemis Croc. And this is my life. It's not yours. She stands so swiftly that it knocks her chair over backwards. Oliver and her mom are both staring at her with wide eyes, though her mom's are significantly wetter. Dinah, naturally, looks totally impartial. Artemis takes a step for the door, and her mom starts to wheel around to stop her, but she breaks into a run and leaps over a prone umbrella and wrenches the door open, bounding out into the hallway and slamming it closed behind her. Her mom's shouting for her to come back. Artemis sprints, barefoot, past Mr. Mala's apartment, past Mr. Nigma's, past the elevator, down the stairs, out the front doors, and over the sidewalk, her arms pumping, and she keeps going, even though the concrete is making her feet sting, until she somehow winds up in the upscale district where Zatanna and Dick live and regains her awareness to find her fist slamming repeatedly against the front door of Zatanna's two-story mansion. So this is how her first day of school ends. With her pacing around Zatanna's bedroom, kneading furiously away at a stress ball, splitting an Oreo sundae with her, and being totally and completely unable to tell her what's going on. "I had a fight with my mom," she growls, as Zatanna pats her shoulder and yawns. "It's nothing. Just needed some distance." "Zat?" A voice that Artemis definitely does not recognize calls from the other side of the door. "I seriously hope that you're not harboring a fugitive from justice in there, because I gotta say, I don't think that's very wholesome behavior." A pause. "And, do I smell Oreos?" "Go away, Wally!" Zatanna snaps. And Artemis groans and tugs at her hair and realizes right then exactly how much lying sucks. But what sucks more? And hey, she thinks dully, maybe it's genetic. Is how good she is at it. It takes Artemis about 15 minutes after she wakes up the next morning to remember that, oh yeah, her life is in total shambles. Zatanna swats her shoulder a few times to get her up, chattering about how Wally's already left because he wanted to go for a run before the tryouts today, and her dad left for work like an hour ago, and she's been doing Artemis the favor of letting her sleep in as late as possible, so she really should be treated to Starbucks, thanks. Zatanna's floor is cushioned by this huge purple shag rug. "Byzantine," Zatanna insists snootily, so it's way too comfortable to get off of. Artemis groans and rolls over, pulling Zatanna's spare down comforter over her head and mumbling petulantly. Zatanna swiftly yanks it off. "Will you quit moping?" she huffs. "Not that I care about homeroom, but something tells me that Wayne's not going to like it if you combine altercations and truancy all in the same week." Artemis grumbles. She has a point. "Lucky for you, I just happen to have a spare uniform lying around," Zatanna says airily, and then something fabric-y hits Artemis in the face, knocking her down. "It might be a little tight, but whatever, your figure could use the flattery. And look," she holds up a plum-colored knit wool hat. "I even found you a beret." "Swell," Artemis mutters. It becomes immediately clear after she puts on the skirt that she's not going to be able to bend over or sit down or do anything but stand perfectly straight if she doesn't want everyone in the room to get a clear view of her Wonder Woman underwear. The blazer and dress shirt fit fine, though, thank God. Plus, she's had an old pair of sneakers lying around Zatanna's room since the summer, so she won't even have to go shoeless. It's not a bright side or anything. More like a dull glimmer in an ocean of unfathomable darkness. But whatever. It's something. "So," Zatanna coos as she and Artemis stand side by side in front of the mirror, knotting their ties. "What did you and your mom fight about?" Artemis bristles just the tiniest bit. She attempts to pull a shrug, but it just looks like she's trying to jerk a fly off of her shoulder. She's just been all controlly lately, trying to get me to be someone I'm not. Zatanna hums pensively and doesn't press her further. Weird. Well, we'd better get going, she eventually sighs, straightening her blazer and primping her now slightly curled hair. Higher education to sit through and all. Yeah, Artemis mutters distantly. She almost walks into a telephone pole on the way to school. Zatanna doesn't even ask her what the hell is wrong with her, and see? This is why they're best friends. School is a blur. A boring and terrible blur, but a blur nonetheless. Homeroom is weird. She finds herself sitting stiffly at her desk for the entire 25 minutes, like she's expecting Bruce Wayne to suddenly approach her and beat her up for being such a disappointment. He's just the way she remembers from her freshman year orientation. Unusually buff for just a billionaire, incredibly severe-looking, allergic to smiles or jokes or humanity in general. He gruffly barks all of their names when he takes roll, tells them to be on their best behavior since it's the first week of school, warns them not to disrespect his authority, and then dismisses them. It is, single-handedly, the most terrifying experience of Artemis's life. And she became a princess yesterday. Let that sink in. To her surprise, she does not fail her chemistry quiz. She gets a D-, which is pretty great by her standards. She's bouncing all the way through independent study, even though Bruce Wayne is towering over her calmness for that class, too. Will you cut that out? Zatanna hisses out of the corner of her tight mouth. I'm trying to concentrate and you're shaking the table. You're just jealous you didn't get a D-, Artemis replies in a whisper, smirking. No, contrary to the champions in the room, Zatanna gets B's on her astronomy quizzes, Dick adds in. Artemis is flanked by both him and Zatanna. Or, well, that's my prediction anyway. She may require some of my expert assistance. Artemis doesn't even know how Zatanna had managed to get into astronomy. It's the most popular science class in the whole school, taught by this peppy young genius named Mr. Strange, who has a hilariously over-the-top rivalry with the physics teacher and computer club faculty liaison, Ms. Roquette. They've been trying to decide who's smarter ever since Artemis enrolled. We haven't even had quizzes yet, Richard, Zatanna mutters, shooting him a cold look. And what makes you think I need your help? You tend to enjoy it when you get it, Dick says smugly. And Artemis claps her hands over her ears. No thanks. What's going on back there? Mr. Wayne grunts from the front of the room. Zatanna and Dick don't react, but Artemis's head jerks up. Nothing, she squawks, and then busies herself with doodling a cat on her English reading list with increased concentration. Dick is snickering next to her. She elbows him. Zatanna nudges her slightly, and she glances over to see a slip of paper next to her arm. In the upper left corner, scrawled in purple ink, in immaculate cursive, is, "You still up for seeing West's track dry out today?" Artemis nods discreetly. Not that she's actually interested in the track-related fate of Zatanna's mysterious Kansan cousin, who had said something mildly funny last night that she would have laughed at if she hadn't been crying, or anything, but she'll take any excuse to stay away from home for a little while longer. So, track tryouts it will be. Artemis, Dick whispers, passing her a paper crane. Can you hand this to party name of Zatara? It's an apology crane. Artemis wrinkles her nose and plucks it out of his fingers, ignores his wolfish grin, and hands it over to Zatanna. Zatanna sets it down without looking at it, But Artemis swears she sees the tiniest smile perk up on her focused face. She slumps in her chair. They are so gross. From his desk, Bruce Wayne looks sharply up, like he can sense his adopted son giving pretty things to pretty girls, and that is the most dangerous thing to ever occur at Gotham Academy. Dick leans back, crosses his feet on the desk, and smiles dreamily up at the ceiling. It's cloudy and a little nippy when Artemis, Dick, and Zatanna all straggle up to the bleachers at the combination track and football field. Artemis tugs the beret down over her ears and watches her breath cloud up in front of her. Dick is wearing mittens, like the absolute loser he is. So I was thinking that the theme this year could be Enchantment Under the Sea. Zatanna is babbling with sparkling eyes, gesturing grandly at the air. We could blow up clear balloons like bubbles and hang papier-mâché fish and everything could be all tropical colors. Dick is sniggering. I think you and I need to have a movie night before you finalize that idea. Zatanna grimaces at him like he's some kind of circus freak. Go on a date with yourself, Grayson. I'm trying to think. She dismisses, her cheeks flushing infinitesimally pink. Now, the dance is on October 29th this year, so... Ooh! She leaps in the air, flailing her arms wildly and accidentally smacking Dick in the face. Why don't we make it a masquerade, since it's so close to Halloween? Dick rubs his nose with a pout. Perfect. I'm definitely going to need a medical de la peste mask to cover up this damage. Artemis glances at the AstroTurf when they pass it on their way to the bleachers. There are about 20 guys scattered over it, stretching and doing jumping jacks and, well, in one case anyway, lying spread-eagled on the ground. All of them in mismatched athletic shirts and shorts and running shoes, all of them lean and excitable-looking. There's a pint-sized auburn-haired kid who looks like a freshman, running in place and blabbering animatedly at another boy his age. One with dark hair and brown eyes and a nervous expression. A few feet away from them are a lanky brunette with a Batman t-shirt. Artemis recognizes him. He broke his arm trying to skateboard down the library staircase last year. And the smallest of them all, a slightly slouching, freckled, gap-toothed kid in green shorts. Artemis scans the rest of the crowd, trying to see if she can guess which one is Zatanna's cousin. She doesn't get very long, though, because moments after she takes her seat between Zatanna and Dick, why does this always happen? Coach Garrick comes jogging up from the water fountains, looking energized, which is probably bad news for the new recruits. All right, listen up, you chumps, he hollers, cramming his hands onto his hips. His scarlet thunderbolt shirt, tried and true, looks especially loud in the gray light. The boys all jump and straighten, whirling around to face him. From the crowd, Artemis catches a flash of bright red hair and frowns, intrigued. Welcome to the 2011-2012 Gotham Academy track and field tryouts. I'm the man who might or might not be your coach, depending on whether or not you survive the afternoon. Artemis definitely sees a few of them gulp. Suckers. Her eyes flicker around until they alight upon the orange hair again. Check out the ginger, she mutters, pointing. Zatanna looks up, follows her finger, and lets out a very worrisome giggle. She doesn't say anything. That's even more worrisome. Coach Garrick divides them all up based on what they want to try out for and yells at them to do stretches while he takes a head count. Artemis looks over at Zatanna and, sure enough, as soon as the guys start bending over and their calves start straining, a diabolical spark appears in her blue eyes. You're so gross, Artemis hisses to her. I know, Zatanna replies, clearly distracted. But being gross never felt so good. Dick scoffs under his breath, It hits the back of his teeth in a hard tch sound. The redhead. He's too far away for Artemis to distinguish any other features, so that's what she's going to call him, is still facing away from the bleachers, and he's over in the group that's going out for middle distance running. Coach Garrick hollers out that the sprinters will be trying out first, then the short distance runners, then the middle, the long distance, then the hurdlers and jumpers. Are we seriously going to have to sit through all of this just to watch your stupid cousin embarrass himself? Artemis groans aloud. Shh, Zatanna says, slapping her hand over Artemis's mouth. I'm trying to see Marvin White's junk. It's times like these when Artemis deeply and fiercely wishes that her brain could just go white. Instead, all she can do is sit there for the next however many hours and suppress her gag reflex, which, by the way, has been especially active since last night. Zatanna continues chattering enthusiastically about her plans for the homecoming dance, which, from the sound of it, is definitely going to be a masquerade now. And, okay, if it is, Artemis might go. She kind of zones out for most of it. Present situation considered, there is nothing she cares about less than Wally Rudolph West's track and field tryouts, whichever one of the many skinny guys he may be. What kind of excitement is she supposed to derive from watching a bunch of dudes run after each other in a circle when she's been convinced, in varying degrees, that she's going to die of a heart attack for the past 24 hours? She's about halfway through a vision of her reinstating the guillotine of Vlatava just so she can behead Oliver when Zatanna's hand is suddenly violently jostling her shoulder at about the same rhythm that Dick's elbow is colliding repeatedly with her ribs. If Artemis was more on her toes, she'd fire off a few death threats, but she doesn't get the chance to think of any before Zatanna is ordering her to pay attention, pointing at the eastern end of the track. Artemis shoves her over and looks. There's a girl walking along the outside of the tarmac with her hands linked behind her. The gaggle of boys is heading toward her. Among them is the redhead, so hey, Artemis must have been freaking out about her royal heritage for longer than she thought. And he's in the lead, she exclaims, gesturing. My ginger, the ginger I saw, he's in the lead. Will you shut up and focus? Zatanna snaps, swatting her upside the head. That's Megan Morse, you rube. Sans bodyguard, in case you haven't noticed. Artemis blinks. Megan what now? Have you learned nothing in your time at our fine institution? Dick exclaims with an over-the-top sigh. For shame. Megan Morse just happens to be one of the many daughters of the entrepreneurial and scientific genius who's in charge of Star Lab's Mars landing program. As in, one of the richest guys in the country? As in, Megan Morse is worth such a huge amount of ransom cash that she has a 24-hour bodyguard. As in... well, we'll just see how this plays out. Wow. Once again, you are a font of totally useless knowledge, Artemis deadpans. Dick's evil joy is not stunted by her sarcasm. Megan Morse looks pretty unassuming for apparently being so loaded and valuable. Her russet hair is in a loose braid, and her plaid burgundy headband looks like something out of the 1970s. She's a little stooped over, like she's constantly prepared to duck, and her face is round and freckled. Her backpack is a bright neon green. The boys go thumping rhythmically past her. Just then, from the hydrangea bushes, a dark-haired, pale man in a black suit and wraparound sunglasses comes leaping nimbly onto the track. Artemis shrieks in surprise. Megan seems to hear her, gives a start, and whirls around in time to see the Men in Black extra frowning at her in something like disappointment. She squeaks so loudly that it's audible even from the bleachers, and then pivots around and runs. And, okay, Artemis has seen her fair share of Indiana Jones movies, but at the end of the day, what happens after that has to be the wackiest chase scene in history. Megan goes scrambling away, and the black suit guy, who by now Artemis has to guess is probably her bodyguard, surges after her, his tie flying out behind him. He's lean and fast. Probably comes with the territory of being trained to take down assassins and kidnappers, and starts to catch up with her no problem. Megan screams at him to go away and keeps going, her backpack thudding against her. The track boys hear this, look over their shoulders, and all yell and scatter, stumbling out of the way to clear a path so they don't all get bulldozed down by this guy whose open suit jacket just revealed that he's carrying a gun. "Oh my god," Zatanna says, disbelievingly, her hand whacking Artemis's arm. And, like, for a second, Artemis thought she was just surprised by the ridiculous bodyguard-to-bodyguard-aid act playing out in front of them. But then she notices that both Zatanna's and Dick's eyes are on something further ahead of them. She follows their gaze and splutters. The redhead is still going. He seems to be under the impression that Megan and her bodyguard are both chasing him, if his terrified yelp and increased speed are anything to go by. He goes tearing around the curve, his limber legs slicing through the air, and jets off down the home stretch at a speed that would be pretty impressive if he wasn't being a total loser. Coach Garrick is yelling stuff at Megan and her bodyguard about how his dead grandma could run faster than they are. A freaking course. But Artemis's ginger is in top form, flying along the straight line and periodically looking over his shoulder in terror. Artemis's eyes are drawn to his bright yellow and red sneakers and... Oh! Dude, you're... She starts to yell, standing up and pointing. And he blinks, looks up and meets her eye... Just as he passes, something inside of her thumps, and then steps unceremoniously on his own undone shoelaces. With a shout, he's flung forward, slamming knees first into the tarmac and actually skidding by the elbows, just as Megan's bodyguard catches up to her and captures her by the backpack strap. Zatanna and Dick both stand too, and all three of them gawk in bewilderment as the redhead, with a series of oofs and ows, rolls to a stop right over the finish line and splays, spread-eagled, at Coach Garrick's feet. Megan's bodyguard is scolding her in too low of a voice to be heard, and Megan's eyes are swimming with tears. He puts his arm around her shoulders and steers her down the rest of the track, muttering something to Coach Garrick as they both pass. The other runners are all straggling over to the finish from across the field, now that their lives aren't in immediate danger, and Coach Garrick is surveying the redhead with his hands on his hips and his foot tapping impatiently on the ground. The redhead notices this after a beat and immediately stiffens, but doesn't get up. Maybe he's too catatonic. He's stammering out something, incomprehensibly rapid, and then Coach Garrick puts a hand up, effectively silencing him. Artemis does not know why she's holding her breath. "West," he declares. "That was the most absurd thing I have ever seen in my life. You pull any of that Laurel and Hardy nonsense at a meet, and you'll be off the team before you can say Sheboygan. But for now..." His face splits into a grin. "Not bad, kid. We could use a guy like you." Artemis's mouth falls open. "Wait, that's your..." "Come on," Zatanna interrupts, yanking her up by the elbow and dragging her down the bleachers toward the exit. Dick is giggling unstoppably while he follows. When the three of them reach the track, spilling out onto it from the open metal gate, Coach Garrick is already ordering the other runners to reconvene at the starting line again so they can do their tryout over again without interruptions like armed bodyguards and wealthy heiresses with questionable fashion sense. Artemis, Zatanna, and Dick all come to a halt. Zatanna in the lead. Right at the still-prone redhead's side. The next time you try out for something, sell tickets, Zatanna immediately says, stifling a laugh behind her fist. The next time you come watch me try out for something, bring an ambulance, the redhead replies in a wobbly voice that just slightly cracks at the end. He pushes himself up by the palms and hisses at the open scrapes on both of his knees. And some spare legs. He lifts his head to survey the three of them, and something in Artemis's stomach drops straight down to her feet because, oh no, he's hot. Even with profusely bleeding elbows. She stares at him. He's all loud orange hair and lean muscles, and if Jackson Pollock was ever hired to put freckles on someone, the result would be this guy. His eyes are an impossibly bright green, sort of like Megan's backpack, or like lime Skittles, and his face is just slightly chiseled at the jawline, and his cutout tank top reveals a fading farmer's tan. Who is this? He asks, pointing at her. At her. Art, Zatanna declares with a flourish. This is the cousin. Be cool, Artemis. Be cool. Say something funny. Now. Now! Wally Rudolph, huh? Artemis says, smirking and cocking her hip just slightly. The way Jade used to when she would talk to boys. Cute shorts. I'm guessing this is why you aren't allowed at the reindeer games? Wally's face immediately flushes, and his orange eyebrows smash together. Crap! Wait! Who? He growls again, glowering up at her. Are you? Artemis's face drops into a frown, but she pushes it off in an instant like the pro she is. Artemis! She replies coolly. Wally, he fires back, with noticeable curtness, like she doesn't already know. He glares over at Zatanna accusatorily. Never heard of her. Excuse me. Hi, I'm right here, Artemis snaps, her fists tightening. He blows his hair out of his face and finally stands, facing purposefully away from Artemis. She can feel her lower lip sticking furiously out. Suddenly, Wally West's surprisingly attractive face is starting to take on the appearance of a bullseye. Well, Dick exclaims with a loud sigh, his arms akimbo. Artemis and Wally shoot him identical glares. Out of the corner of her eye, Artemis can see Zatanna squinting at her and Wally with her lips pursed. How's about we celebrate that stunning first impression with some, say, cheap convenience store food? Only if you want to see Wally suddenly transform into a reticulating python, Zatanna chirps, slinging her arm around Wally's shoulders and dangling on her tiptoes off of him. Which is way less glamorous than it sounds. I'm guessing your hilarious friend here will be tagging along, Wally grunts. Jabbing his thumb in Artemis's direction and, okay, that's it. I'm right, Artemis snarls and then breaks into a shout. Here! Everyone's eyes land on her, with varying degrees of astonishment, and she exhales in a huff through her nose. She is sorely disappointed when smoke doesn't come out. And I have a name, champ. One that's a lot prettier than yours. So you could stand to start using it for a while. Unless it's too many syllables for you. She plows on, jabbing a finger in the air at him. His face is starting to loosen, but whether it's from surprise or guilt, she does not actually care. But hey, you'll be happy to know that going to waste my lunch money on Twinkies with you is the last thing I want to do. She turns sharply to Zatanna. I'm going home.
Whoa, lighten up, Artemis, Dick breezes,
stepping over to Wally and slapping him hard on the back of the shoulder until his knees buckle.
By hilarious friend, he obviously means me.
Grayson, Wally grumbles, scowling at the ground.
We met just last Thursday,
Dick sighs, wiping an imaginary tear.
He almost bludgeoned me to death with a baseball bat when I accidentally climbed through his window instead of Zatanna's. Ugh, those were the days.
Don't touch me, Wally hisses.
You want me to lighten up?
Artemis screams, making Wally jump. She stops herself by clamping her teeth down onto her lip. Hard.
I'm a princess now, you moron! Lightening up isn't exactly an option when I could be a United Nations representative by December, and I don't even know if I can go home without being disowned, and why should I do it for this West guy anyway, if he thinks he's so spectacularly important? To be honest, I hope he trips on his way to hell.
She stammers, and then recollects herself, her shoulders rising like hackles.
Leaving.
She tosses her hair with a sneer.
Good luck entertaining the red-nosed reindeer. Oh, that's original! Never heard that one before!
Wally yelps, his voice jumping up about 3 indignant octaves. But by the time Zatanna starts furiously hitting him in the arm, Artemis is already 12 steps away. Her feet are stomping off of the tarmac and onto the parking lot before she can even notice that she's still wearing Zatanna's stupid beret. She tears it off, grinding her teeth and storming past the Lexuses and Benzes, past the Olympic-sized indoor swimming pool with its stupid floor-to-ceiling windows, past the library and down the sidewalk, gravitating toward the way home without paying attention. She curses, loudly, just because she feels like it, startling several pigeons into scuttling away from her. She crams the hat into her bag, making extra sure not to treat it with any kind of care, just to spite Zatanna for being related to assholes. Artemis does not care how green his eyes are. Nobody gets away with being a dick to her. Except Dick. Because he can't help it. Birth certificate and all. This would officially qualify as the worst day in history, if it hadn't been preceded by life-altering declarations of nobility, which are worse, and that beautiful D-minus in chemistry, which balance it out. Then it all hits her again, like a falling piano. Her stupid dad had to nail her stupid mom and create 2 stupid royal babies, and then lie to them for like 1,000,000 years, and her stupid self had to be one of those stupid royal babies, and there's no way in hell she is going back home. Without missing a beat, she reaches the corner of the block and pivots around on 1 foot to march back the way she came. She doesn't even know where she's planning on going, except maybe the closest morgue so she can check herself in. Morgues let you do that, right? She slaps the crosswalk button at the same intersection she crosses every day, shifting from foot to foot. While she's waiting, a sleek black motorcycle comes roaring up the right lane.
It's being ridden, don't worry.
And swerves to a smooth halt right in front of her. A bunch of cars honk at it angrily. She forces her eyes to stay on the other side of the street. It could be like a motorcycle-riding serial killer or something, and she needs to look distracted if she's going to take him by surprise. Artemis, the rider says, and a groan spills out of Artemis before she can stop it.
Why does she have to recognize that voice?
She glares over to see the rider, decked out in a black leather jacket and jeans, pull off its helmet to make way for a spill of light blonde hair and a severe expression.
That's my name, Artemis mutters. Dinah, right?
And that's mine. Dinah smiles a little stiffly and leans onto the handlebars of the motorcycle, her helmet dangling from 1 fingerless gloved hand.
Some song by the Police is playing,
tinny and indistinct on the small speakers. Heading home?
Yeah,
Artemis snips. Like it's the most obvious thing in the world, which it is. What do you want?
Just want to talk, Dinah replies plainly. We didn't really get the chance to last night before you went on the lam.
Artemis rolls her eyes. I don't know how being on the lam works in Vlatava, but generally, voluntarily going home isn't part of the process. And don't tell me how worried my mom's been, or how you were ready to call the bullies. I know the whole drill, and I'm really not in the mood.
Dinah sighs quietly, linking her fingers together and ducking her head.
I'm sorry, she says after a second, and darts her eyes up to look at Artemis with sincerity.
The crossing sign chirps, but Artemis doesn't move.
What for? She mutters dully. Besides the obvious.
Which would be,
ruining my life?
Artemis glares at her with every ounce of ferocity she's got.
Or at least, you know, making it feel like it's not even mine.
Well, I can admit we didn't drop it on you in the most ceremonious way, Dinah chuckles.
Ollie, pardon, His Majesty has never been very good at subtlety.
She looks to the side with an unreadable smile. Artemis fidgets.
So what, are you here to, like, escort me home?
She eventually mumbles, kicking at a piece of broken glass.
Because
Dinah hums out a short laugh.
No, I'm not, unless you're lonely. I just want to talk. Oh, great. You wanting to talk. Since that ended so great last time.
Artemis deadpans. She tightens her grip on her bag strap.
Whatever. I guess this can't get any worse.
Dinah chuckles through her nose, dropping her chin into their crossed arms and giving Artemis a wry smile.
I'm sure you remember what Oliver said last night, she begins. Unfortunately,
Artemis grinds out under her breath. About how he, well, the both of us, really, have come to the country and reached out to you because we intended to give you,
she pulls a face.
What he insists on calling princess lessons.
Artemis stiffens. And she's surprised her ponytail doesn't puff out like Jade's fur does whenever she hears a loud noise. Yeah, about that. No, she barks, starting to step forward to cross the street, because she has already done with this conversation. Niet. Nein. Absolument no.
Nah, Dinah coos, and Artemis falters.
That's Vlatavan for no. Lesson number one, since it's a word I'm sure you'll be using very frequently. I'd like to get through that crosswalk, if you don't mind, Artemis grumbles.
What's stopping you? Dinah asks coolly, smirking with confidence at ease. But before you say no, you might want to hear the terms of the deal.
Artemis freezes altogether.
A Ferrari honks furiously at her, and she bounds backwards, barely missing it, falling in a mess of flailing limbs on her butt on the sidewalk. She scowls venomously up at Dinah, because, yeah, that short skirt Zatanna loaned her totally failed to protect her posterior from grainy cement.
Swell.
I'm listening, she manages to grit out through her clamped teeth. Dinah props her chin up on one hand, smiling down at her with the kind of smug amusement that only shows up on the faces of people who know they've already won. It fades in a second, though, replaced by a look of patience and understanding that Artemis really shouldn't be calming down for, because all of a sudden, it feels like Dinah Lance is the only person in the whole world who understands her, just with that look. You know, Artemis, this is probably going to sound odd to you, but you really remind me of your father, Dinah says.
Whoops. Understood a feeling? Gone.
No, let me finish. You're strong-willed and stubborn
and incredibly courageous if jaywalking in this city is as dangerous as it looks. But there are parts of your mother in you, too. You're fair and selfless and practical, and you believe in helping other people. Artemis snorts. Really? Because running away from all of this responsibility shtick doesn't feel very selfless. And, by the way, my mom gets on my case every day for helping other people. I think you've got the wrong lady. No, I'm sure I don't, Dinah replies. And I know it's probably very obvious to you, being 16 years old and therefore omniscient, but your mother is only trying to protect you, to make sure you have a good chance in life.
Right,
Artemis mutters, picking at a loose thread in her sock. I mean, being a member of a royal family is really stunting my opportunities. Dinah sighs, but it sounds, for some reason, kind of fond. And you've got a good head on your shoulders, too, she continues, pointedly ignoring Artemis's interruption. You're smart, Artemis splutters out a laugh. You're tough, and you're kind, but you know when to be firm. All of these things are pretty good indicators that, in time, you would be a great ruler. The only thing missing is your confidence.
Having confidence isn't going to magically make me want to run a country, Artemis exclaims, throwing her arms out in exasperation. Look, did I not make it clear to you guys or something? I don't want this. I will never want this. I just want to live my life the way I've thought I would for the past, 10 years. I just want...
You're scared, Dinah tells her simply. Of course you're scared. Oliver doesn't see it because it's been so long since he was scared about becoming king that he forgot what it felt like. But Artemis, he will understand. No one's going to argue and say that ruling Vlatava is an easy job. But things have changed a lot since we seceded from the USSR. And right now, Vlatava just wants to get back on its feet. It's going to need you for that, sooner or later. But for now, you don't have to make a decision right away. No one's pressuring you. That's ironic, since Artemis has felt like she is the subject of a hit Queen song since she woke up this morning. And I know it's hard to think about it, Dinah murmurs. Especially because it must seem that we're asking so much of you before you're even ready to answer. But please, please hear us out. We're not here to cause any kind of massive upheaval or undue stress. Do those mean the same thing in Vlatavan as they do around here? Artemis interjects, crossing her arms and faking an over-the-top wince. Because from my perspective, that's exactly what you've been causing, and it's only taken you, less than 24 hours.
Dinah exhales heavily, slumping. How about this? She says after a moment. The best way for you to get a feeling for what ruling Vlatava will be like is through these lessons we're here to give you, so why don't we use them as a way to test the waters? You won't even need to worry about ruling until you're 21. It's Latavan law. Aside from which, Oliver will remain king until he passes. And in the meantime, we could educate you. If you still feel the same way as you do now by your introduction ball in December, then... She takes a deep breath. You have my permission to make a run for it.
Artemis gawks at her. She's not sure if it's the proposal itself or the whole introduction ball thing.
And, what exactly is it about me that's inspiring you to risk high treason? She finally manages to ask. And despite the snideness in her voice, she still can't hide her astonishment. Dinah shrugs. A smile twitches across her face, one that seems way too sentimental for her, and her eyes flick back up to meet Artemis's. Call it faith, she says. She extends one hand, tilting her head so that her hair spills past her shoulder. And a little bit of stupidity. But I trust we'll both be seeing you soon. She winks. Wednesdays, 4 p.m. sharp, 116 Mountain Drive. The villa with the green flags and the archery range. Artemis chews her lip, gulps down her own spit, stares, long and hard, at Dinah's still hovering hand. And then, because she is stupid, and because she is delirious, and because she is in an exceptionally vulnerable state from being irritated by Wally West, and because she just is who she is, she shakes it. Mayday.